Season 1, Episode 2. Today's guest, Broken Bones Distillery. But now let's get started with the most juniper-loaded show on the interwebs.
It's the Fabulous Gin Show.
And here's your host,
Jan Persiel.
Welcome to the second episode of the Fabulous Gin Show. Today we travel to Slovenia, where we meet one of the founders of the Broken Bones Distillery. There's a lot to the name and to the history of this distillery, despite the fact that it's quite young. And I'm quite happy that I got the chance to talk to Bojdan, one of the founders of the distillery, and would love you to learn more about this fabulous gin. So let's get started. So we have the interview with Bojdan, and I hope I pronounced that right this time.
Yeah.
And you are one of the founders of the Broken Bones Distillery, and I'm very happy to have you on the show.
Well, thank you for having me. Nice to be talking to you.
So we are basically traveling from the northern part of Europe, from Scotland in our last episode, down to the more southern part, to Slovenia today. And that is where you are located and where you come from. I discovered your gin pretty much by accident on the Bar Convent Berlin in 2019, and pretty much on my way out. And I'm really happy that I kind of stumbled across your booth with very sore feet by then, and was actually amazed by the gin itself. We tried the Navy strength back then, and so I thought I must actually talk to you, because this is really one of the more interesting gins on my gin shelf. So maybe you can give us a quick introduction about where probably the Broken Bones part comes from, and maybe a quick summary where you're located to start off.
Yeah, well, we are a small distillery located in our capital, Ljubljana, the capital of Slovenia. And our story started about 8 years ago when my colleague Borut said, why don't we as whiskey lovers start experimenting with whiskey? And so for the next few years, we've been collecting information, developing the whiskey, our still and everything. And through following whiskeys, we also discovered the modern styles of gin. We really liked the idea of much more flavorful, fragrant gins that we were discovering compared to what was previously on the market or what we remembered from our youth when we've been drinking gin. And so they gave us a thought and started to experiment with gin as well about 3 years ago. Did a lot of experiments, developed our own still to make what we wanted. And we wanted to make really a very citrusy, fragrant gin. But since we come from whiskey background, we also wanted it to be a gin that you can drink on its own. So aromatic, but also full flavored, nice to just sip neat. And our first gin was made with London Dry method. So that's why we call it London Dry. It's 45% alcohol, a lot of lemon, juniper, and then some spiciness of cardamom on the taste. And Slovenian botanicals, a bit special to gin, would be rosehip and linden tree flowers. And yeah. The next step led us to experimenting with Navy strength, which is kind of comparable to what in whiskey you would say is cask strength. So 57%, much stronger in alcohol. But this enabled us to, by using the same botanicals as in our original gin, to have even more concentrated flavor, to add more of the same botanicals, to really get out this massive kick of flavor And it's really the navy gin is the one I really like to sip on its own and just enjoy it as it is, or in a really dry martini with maybe a dash of vermouth.
Not too much though, to not liquid, right?
Yeah.
I must say in terms of the strength of the taste, and as I said, I just tried the navy strength so far. It really blows a lot of the other gins on the market out of the water in terms of intensity and, basically punch when it comes to the taste. Not so much, I must say, in terms of the, I don't want to say spice, but alcohol intensity. But I was actually amazed about how smooth the gin feels despite being a 57% ABV gin, and that actually made me really curious, and I didn't expect that, to be honest with you, that's why I regard it as something which is more special on the gin shelf, really. Interesting. Let me come back to the beginning there, when you said 8 years ago, being whiskey lovers, it sounds a little bit like as if you came to being distillers or people distilling or founding a distillery without any background. Is that the case, or is there some kind of spirits background among you? And I think I read you are three people, right? So that would be you and two more friends.
Yeah, me, Borut, the colleague which we started the whiskey distilling, and then my wife Polona, which is more of a gin lover herself, which she was instrumental a bit in pushing us into gin as well. Well, it's a kind of a long story of alcoholic drinks appreciation. We all three have kind of a little bit of maybe not professional background so much than appreciation of the drinks, with a bit of hobby background. My colleague Borut, he's been distilling most of his life. His father before him was also home distiller, so they've been working a lot on what is typically made, distilled here in our parts in Slovenia. It's fruit brandies, but also he was experimenting with absinthe, which is kind of similar to gin. And I was getting my first experience with winemaking about 20 years ago when I met my wife now, and back then my girlfriend Polona, who's the third partner in the project. And yeah, through working in a family vineyard, really got me curious and started doing a lot of research on winemaking, went to several courses, and later on got curious about making beer as well, and went to short training to the UK in that regard. And yeah, this distilling background of Borut and mine in wine and beer making got us the basic knowledge is needed to start experimenting with whiskey. But really, yeah, this was just the beginning where we really got deeply into the intricacies of making the whiskey, and then really doing a lot of research. Right now I'm also studying at London Institute of Brewing and Distilling to become a diploma distiller. So yeah, we are curious about all the aspects, both technical and just enjoying the spirits.
Great. You mentioned before that your wife basically was the person responsible for pushing towards the gin, and as you said before, the idea about having these very intense taste gins was one of the leading parts. I think before we kind of like totally brush over that, it's probably a thing we should before it gets totally lost, mention the name of the company, the Broken Bones part. That is, first of all, I thought, well, okay, is that some kind of thing that was just connected to the Navy strength? Because I just saw that and, you know, skull and crossbones, which kind of felt like, oh, okay, that makes sense. But then figured out, oh, okay, there's more to it. And that is, that dates back to some personal event, if I recall that right?
Yeah, it's a painful story of getting our name, but fortunately it turned all right now. About 4 years ago, when we were still distilling in my basement, I was cleaning and slipped on the wet floor and fell, broke my leg. 10 days later, a colleague borrowed, had an accident and broke his nose. And so since then, several of our friends were like, you guys are kind of broken. So probably Broken Bones Whiskey would be the name to use for your whiskeys. So yeah, we were still looking for the name, and it was interesting, connected a little bit to our experiences. And so it stuck. And this then later led to the designs of the bones and also the skulls for each of our gins has its own animal or human skull on it, together with the botanicals that we use in making that gin.
Yeah, very nice. And they look very very simple on the one hand side, and then again very distinguishable. And yeah, you just spot them right away to some extent. I'll put pictures of it right into the podcast at this point, so whoever listens to it on a suitable device can just look at it at this very moment. As a matter of fact, I'll have links throughout the show to certain bits and pieces which you might mention as well, so whenever you think there is something like something we mentioned, then the chances are pretty good that there will be a link available. Oh, okay. Right in your podcast player. Great. So basically, passion drove you forward to actually start working on that appreciation and producing your own products. Now you've basically touched upon that that there's a certain wish to, or there was, to create specific products. Since we're on the gin show here, I think it's absolutely crucial to talk about the gins first. But as you just mentioned, you're working on different products as well, and I'm pretty sure that that kind of rubs off onto the gins and the other way around. But maybe we just have a quick deep dive on the gins for the moment. You mentioned the some of the botanicals already. I read on your website that unlike many other gin makers, you're not using a typical grain-based spirit, but one out of sugar beets. Is there a specific reason for it? I mean, basically, in order to have gin, it's just a neutral agricultural-based alcohol that is needed. But mostly, it gets mentioned when it's a grain alcohol, and I did not read or actively read sugar beet that much before. It might be actually the most common thing, and I just notice it when there's just grain-based ones which are being promoted. But maybe you can enlighten us in terms of the base.
Yeah, well, it all goes back to history of why anybody would be making spirits or how. It's usually with the ingredients that are available plentifully. So here, maybe in the southern parts, we mostly farmers distill fruits, which are abundant. And in the north, you don't have so much fruit, but you have wheat or barley and all those things. So they typically were used to make both gin and whiskey and maybe other spirits like vodka. It's mostly of the availability of sugar beet in our regions, again, being near the centers of production of sugar. That made us to decide to go with the local product again. As you said, basically gin is made with neutral alcohol, so alcohol distills to such a high strength, over 96%, that it should lose its own character, and then you just add the botanicals and get the aromas from these botanicals that you redistill again with this neutral alcohol. Of course, if you taste different neutral alcohols, you always see a little bit of difference. So maybe this sugar beet neutral alcohol is a little bit sweeter, a little bit mellower than the grain alcohol. So yeah, gives a little bit of difference to start with.
Great. Okay, that clarifies that. Wonderful. In terms of, as you said, using it as a base alcohol, you are using, or when you produce your gins, as you said, they are a London dry method. So infusing, then distilling, and not adding anything later on, right. At least for the classic. And the Navy strength is probably the same. There are two more gins which you've got, or actually three right now. Is there a specific way which you do it? I think I recall that there was a method a little bit different. I think you infuse, but you actually distill with just the infused alcohol, right? And not adding or not leaving the botanicals in the still as many others do it.
We actually leave them inside.
Ah, okay.
They do, yeah. We steep them for about 24 hours in a bit at a bit increased temperature, so we get a little bit more maceration. Then we are using a still of our own design, which we kind of when we were doing the experiments with the gin, with what botanicals to use, we also experimented with what type of still would be most appropriate for the gin we were after. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, well, we had it built specifically to our needs. So it's a bit unique, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
Although what... still comprising or being basically a pot still. So you have distillation apparatus and then condensing apparatus, a part of this apparatus, like in classical stills, but it's a little bit specific to the details.
Great. Is there, I mean, when I can imagine that having different stills, being someone who's been distilling for a while, you kind of get an idea of what certain things do during distillation and how different stills behave. So I'm just someone who reads articles and probably the odd forum entry, etc., about how certain stills affect a product. I can imagine that is quite a task to say what you want in a still, right? In order to make it specific to one's needs. How did you go about that? Because basically, is it something where you say, well, we need these tubes longer, or we need the shape a little bit different in order to have the reflux in a different way, or anything like that, without giving away all the secret build plans for your still. But it sounds very very trialing to some extent in terms of that you build something and then basically would have to do something to it, distill something, and then maybe change it and see whether it actually gets a different result. It sounds very complicated to some extent to me.
Yeah, it is, but it's also, for me, being a quite technical guy coming from computer science background, also something that, yeah, really is interesting to do. We did a lot of research of distillation, as I mentioned. I also am studying this distillation in the Brewing and Distilling Institute. which gave me really the technical background, I would say, of the distillation, the physical properties and stuff like that. But very important thing is also, yeah, doing the experimentation, doing it yourself, seeing what works, what doesn't. So yeah, building our own stills really gave us insight into how distillation works and what is good and what is not. And the third part would be that we also really got deep into the sampling or degustation part of the spirits. So really been tasting a lot of whiskies, a lot of gins. I'm also a trained, official trained degustator for wines here in Slovenia. So it really helps kind of defining your palate, fine-tuning it to notice the potential problems that you're running into and then remedying them. So as you mentioned, with our Navy Strength, yeah, we really wanted to have it very smooth, even though it has a lot of alcohol. So it's, yeah, interplay between the technology and how you run the process and then how you decide where to do the cuts in the distillation, what to leave inside, what to remove.
Yes, and then as pretty much everyone uses natural products, there's always a variation between those as well, right? Where you can only control it to some extent and basically have slight modifications, I guess, here and there. Once you have distilled your gins, you basically marry them with water, and as I read it, you actually do that in multiple steps in order to slowly achieve the drinking level, right? So you don't mix it right away and you let it rest for quite some time. Would you like to mention anything about that? Because there are quite different approaches to that when it comes to different producers.
Yeah, well, gin, good thing about gin is that you, when you distill it, it's pretty much what comes out of the still is the thing you will be drinking later on. So when you're tasting what you distilled, you already kind of know if it is okay, it is not. Compared to whiskey, where after distillation, when you have this new make spirit, you really have to rest it in the barrels for at least a year before you know if everything has gone to according to plan. So in gin, yeah, it's faster, but still gin needs a little bit of resting period of at least a few weeks to a month to marry this all the components together to make it smoother. So basically, great. And also adding water slowly helps you to kind of do this dilution with a maybe less disruption of the volatile substances.
Yeah, I think that's a part which is quite interesting, because there's a lot of people I talked to in the past who were not even aware of the fact that speed might actually change something, and I've I know of at least two gins which have been basically coming from the still pretty much got bottled right away, which actually created nice gins, but after they actually introduced a resting period, they actually turned out to be great gins, because this time actually giving it time and not just sealing it in a glass bottle, not letting it interact with the air around it, for example, really, really made a difference. And you could actually take one of the early batches versus the later ones, and there's a significant difference between them in quality. So giving that time is probably something that I was actually surprised finding out that a lot of distillers weren't even aware of the fact that giving something time would give more or make a product more well enjoyable after all. It seems to be like a secret out in the open, which is well hidden in the open at the same time. Quite interesting to see that. So when you talked about the two the Navy Strength and your London Dry Gin, those were two, and then you've got additional ones. One is an Old Tom. And then you've got the Dragon Gin, and now actually a limited edition one. I don't know whether that's sold out already.
It was sold out. It's a slow gin, but we are making a bigger batch of it right now. Although, slow gin takes a bit longer than just a regular gin because you have to steep the slow berries for quite some while before they release their beautiful aroma. Into the gin.
I mean, I'm a big fan of slow gins. That's probably I could ditch the whole gin interest for slow gins, I guess. I'm actually making slow gin myself for a few years now, and I've been experimenting a lot. Actually, just last week I found a bottle which I forgot, which has been sitting there for 9 months now, I think. So that should be intense. I'm actually looking forward to find out whether that's actually still any good. But so looking forward to seeing more of that coming out. The other two, the Old Tom is that basically based on the London Dry in general as well?
Yeah, or? We kind of always so far start with our classic London Dry as a base for other gins. So also this Old Tom is no different. And since we have linden tree flowers in the original gin, we said, okay, now we're making Old Tom, which is sweetened gin. We will sweeten it with Slovenian linden tree honey. Mm-hmm. And this kind of was a nice idea, but also a very challenging one because turns out honey is not just sweet, but also very aromatic and also kind of a bit astringent or has its own spiciness to it. So it took us a long time to find the perfect formula to marry the gin and the honey. But I think now we have it and it's very good.
Nice. And your Dragon Gin, maybe to round things off, anything to mention about that?
Well, Dragon Gin, if the other gins started with the idea of what we wanted the gins to taste like, the Dragon Gin, it was kind of a bit designed in the opposite direction. It's the Dragon Gin called after the emblem of our city, Ljubljana. And especially the bridge in the city that has really nice dragons on it, really wanted to have those dragons as a sign on our gin, the naked ones stripped to the bone. And based on that, we then were deliberating what goes with the dragon, something fierce, so something spicy. But also not just spiciness, but also this fruitiness that we are always after. And ginger was the obvious choice after this deliberation. So it's spiciness to kind of represent the fire of the dragon. And also ginger being very fruitful, really nicely combining with the lemon and all other fragrances in our gin. And it's again London Dry method, so we distill ginger, quite a huge amount of ginger together with the other botanicals. There's a little bit more lemon to this gin than to the basic one. And it's very, very interesting gin for the ginger lovers, especially in a gin mule cocktail. where you have even more ginger from ginger ale.
Yeah, it sounds as if you can probably turn down the ginger ale part, or even when people make a buck, basically have it all on board, right?
Yeah, when we make it not just with ginger ale, but we substitute half of ginger ale with sparkling water, and then some lemon juice plus simple syrup, and it's really an amazing drink.
Great. Yeah, well, I can imagine, just knowing how intense the other ones were, that something like just soda is, especially when a gin comes along as taste intensive, that it goes a long way without needing any additional mixers, and just substituting water here is probably I'm just imagining things, but that's basically something where when a product is good enough to be carried by just soda and a reduced amount of the other cocktail ingredients, that usually speaks for the product. Nice. So when you say when we make it, is just for those people who once one might travel again, or the locals who, I'm sure there's not a single local who doesn't know your gins yet, but is there the distillery is inside the capital city as well, or are you based a little bit outside, or is there, visit it?
We are in the city. We opened a proper distillery building in last year, where we really wanted to combine the production together with a small shop and the visitors area, where you can come and enjoy our gins, where we can showcase our gins both neat and in various cocktails. So it's a really nice place to visit. But we are, inside the city. We are actually the first distillery in the city in about 60 years. We are amazed when we were reading about distilling in the city, that after the Second World War, the remaining distilleries were either closed, or the one that remained was quickly moved out of the city to some smaller towns. So basically, since Second World War, there was no distilling happening in our capital.
Great. So the craft comes back to where the people are, right? I can only imagine, but maybe that wasn't that much of an issue for you, but maybe you can fill us in about that. I'm pretty sure, and I think James in the last episode actually mentioned that a little bit as well, that it is quite challenging to actually get a distillery set up in the city, basically. As he said, it's easy to find a location, but once you tell people that you're about to boil ethanol, they kind of get a little bit nervous and actually ask whether there is someone else to get the property, and rather have a lawyer who's just using a computer rather than someone boiling ethanol. Is that something which took you a long time, or was it a very tedious process, or is the fact that you were the first ones after such a long time, did that help?
Well, it helped that distilling is widespread in the farms, at least. So it's something that is well known or established in smaller sizes. But it was quite a challenge to really have a proper regular distillery with all the needed permissions or the paperwork or everything. And with regards to duties and all that, we are still in the process of getting the permission for bonded warehouse. So this is something taking a long time.
In terms of the storing, especially since you've got the whiskey background as well, or the production as well, is that something which, probably connected to this permission, something which you try to have all in one place, or is that actually not feasible because I don't know the place, or do you have to store the whiskeys, for example, somewhere else potentially? I mean, ideally.
With whiskey, we have quite a limited quantity of barrels aging so far. It was also connected with this permit for bonded warehouse that I mentioned. So now that Simsud will be getting it soon, we'll be able to increase the whiskey production. But we did release our first whiskey after 3 years of maturation just a month ago.
Okay,
and
congratulations.
We do the distillation and making of the beer for the whiskey all at the same site here in the gin and whiskey distillery.
Oh, great. Okay. Which explains the limitation in terms of barrels or casks, why there's no obvious gin on the lineup, which is obviously somehow barrel, cask, whatever, rested or aged gin, which I am sure, and you can just keep silent if I'm stating the obvious here, and you've got something in the making already, but that would be probably the obvious gin to fill the lineup in terms of colors on your fabulous colorful range there, and probably getting all the experience from the aging with the whiskey as well, right?
Yeah, sure. We have many plans for different experimental limited series for the future, and one probably will be Geneva style drink. Mm-hmm. Going maybe back to the roots, as you mentioned, a lot of gin is made from grain spirits. So the history of gin and whiskey kind of go back to this grain alcohol, which when you distill it is not that good on its own after classic distillation in the pot still.
Yeah.
So in the past, people either had to forget about that drink and leave it in the barrel, a wooden barrel, for several years, and to drink it later, it would become a beautiful colored whiskey. Or if they wanted to speed it up, they would have to add some sugar, some botanicals, something to mask the flavor. And this would be Geneva. And later on, when the production and the industrial production of purified alcohol enabled it, it became gin. So yeah, both gin and whiskey, they come from the same idea of improving the base alcohol.
Yeah, I see. There's definitely a lot of stuff you've got on your list, on your to-do list, so to say. In terms of production quantities, we talked about your specific still. Is that or what about the size? What volume are we talking about? Is it one that you're working on or different ones? I assume you probably have a small one for test runs and probably at least a larger one for the actual production.
We have experimental designs for like just a liter or so for doing quick experiments. That's what we were using when we were designing the recipes. Then we have two different stills. So one for whiskey. That one we actually built ourselves, soldered it, learned how to work with the copper. And this one is 250 liters, and the gin still, it's a separate still, it's a 600 liter still.
Mm-hmm. All right, great. So that's a lot of product that you can actually make out of it. I mean, if it's not the Navy strength, but quite a few bottles that can come of that, right?
Yeah. Great. For our current sales, we still have a lot of free space, let's say. Yeah.
All right. Which brings us to the point, once it's bottled and out there, I mean, obviously, it's available at the distillery and in your shop and probably locally. Can you talk a little bit about the distribution so far and what you're looking for, which markets you're looking at, and where people would actually be able to buy the products?
Yeah, we of course started by covering local markets. So we are very well represented or loved in Ljubljana's bars and restaurants and all around Slovenia. Yeah, we've been getting really good responses and also quite a lot of awards from competitions abroad. So we are working more and more on finding partners abroad. We have currently distribution in the UK. We just shipped the first shipment to the United States, then Japan, some smaller distributors in Denmark, Luxembourg, and Norway. And yeah, we are certainly looking to expand to other markets. We see a lot of tourists from Germany really liking our gin and reordering it through our website, but we are still looking for a German importer and distributor.
Yeah, I see. What would be the best place to go to once, well, when people want to order it? Obviously, your website offers it, that's one thing. So can you ship to pretty much every destination, or are you limited to some, or is there something? I always kind of tend to quote them despite the fact that it's not always true. So if you've got a different address there, feel free to, but is there something like a Masters of Malt or something where people could go? If there's no local distribution you would know of?
Yeah, well, the easiest way, yeah, is just to get it through our website, brokenbones.si, or we are also available through Whiskey Exchange. Mm-hmm. I think right now they ran out of the stock, so we have to send them the new shipment.
Yeah.
Then some, yeah, local distributors have their own sites. So I think in Denmark and Norway, you can get it through their online shops.
Right.
But otherwise, yeah, we ship pretty much everywhere we can, although there are some limits. Some countries put limits up, especially the United States are an example where you really can't get a bottle to without breaking a law or something.
Yeah. Okay. So we have to set up that infamous pirate route again and get you on there as well. I think there's a lot of demand for smuggling again. Not that we would really want to push that forward, but who knows. Which one would you start off with, or which one is your favorite of the gins?
You mean our gins or?
Yeah.
Well, it depends on what I want to drink. If I want to drink a gin and tonic or gin fizz, then I usually go with our classic London Dry. Mm-hmm. But almost more often for me, I like to have a strong drink after lunch, I go with the Navy Strength, just neat at room temperature. That was, yeah, really my favorite in this regard.
Nice. And are there any special recommendations that you would give when people grab this gin? I mean, I'm always a big fan of taking different tonics and trying what works best for you. But are there any like, there's no perfect serve really, because it depends on what people like, but is there anything that you would tell people to try first when they take the London Dry, for example?
We have several recipes of examples how best to use our gins on our website. Mm-hmm. For gin and tonic, for our classic London dry. We did a lot of blind tastings at the beginning, tried all the tonics we could get our hands on. It turned out that the classical Schweppes tonic really worked best with our gin. So in the classical ratio, one part gin, three parts tonic, with a little bit of lemon peel and some juniper berries. It's really a very nice gin. And it's also very important what shape of a glass you use. If traditionally gin could be drunk from a tall glass with a straw, now with all these aromatic gins, it's really not so recommended to drink it with a straw, but to use a glass that's similar to a glass you would use for red wine. So you really get your nose inside and you have these aromas really tickle your nose.
Yeah, I would totally agree, especially it's using a copper glass or a copper balloon is not just there to add lots of ice, but it really helps in really getting the full idea of the product indeed.
Yeah, it really makes the whole difference. Even if I try our gin with in a classic glass, like a square glass with vertical sides, it's much less aromatic than in a copper glass. So yeah, I always go for a copper glass to appreciate the gin.
That's a good tip at the same time here as well. So maybe those of you who haven't tried that should give it a go, because it's really a difference and makes it a lot more enjoyable very often. Maybe a last question, because we're kind of approaching the just crossed the 45-minute mark more or less. You mentioned that you got or won quite a few awards already, and I mean, obviously it worked out for you quite well with a lot of medals. In terms of doing that, what's the drive for you behind submitting your gins to these awards? Is there, I mean, obviously it's recognition, that's one thing. I'm asking because I know a lot of people who say, well, awards, you know, that's, you just submit your stuff. Is there, have you been discussing things like submitting something to an award? I mean, there's always cost connected to it, and sometimes even a lot of time that you have to dedicate to it, just starting with forms, but even other things. Is that something that kind of worked out for you to some extent?
Well, the first impulse why we said, okay, let's see how let's say professional judges, what they think about our gin as well. I mean, we liked our gin. We've been getting very good responses from people, from bars. We said, why not see? Have it compete with other gins and see what turns out. And that was the first idea. But also, later on, maybe for next competitions, it is obvious that you get certain recognition from winning awards. People notice you at the competition, or so it is something worthwhile if, of course, you win awards. Otherwise, it really is an expensive thing to do, especially when you have several varieties of gin. And it becomes a question of, there are many competitions out there, and it becomes a question which makes sense to join or which don't.
Mm-hmm. I guess that's pretty much a whole different topic, which probably makes sense to cover in the future as well, talking about awards, because there are so different perceptions of different awards on the one hand side, and then again, how these help or don't help to a certain extent. So I think there's not that many awards which actually harm or do any harm.
I mean, I don't know if they harm, but the question is what you make out of the awards. I mean, you have to bear in mind that all these judges, they are, again, people like everybody. They have their preferences. So, yeah, sometimes some competitions, they prefer a certain style. The others, they prefer the other style. So depends on the taste of the judges, what will be kind of a number one. But typically, yeah, when you have something solid, you see that it keeps getting awards from different competitions. So then you know that it's not something of certain style of just the one moment, but has some, I don't know, quality that transcends competitions.
Yeah. Very true. Okay. Well, I would probably have like a gazillion more questions going a lot into depth, but on the one hand side, I think that would not be very feasible, A, for the people listening, at least not in one episode, and on the other hand, for you, because I'm pretty sure you have got some work to do as well, especially since we just heard that one of the distributors urgently needs new bottles.
We are just in the middle of distillation today again, so
great.
This will be my next task to check on the still, and then soon afterwards it will be the cutting time, which means that we'll be collecting in separate smaller bottles and then tasting this later on to determine where to do the cutting, which part goes into the gin and which we leave out. Very nice. Important thing to do.
Yeah, and dangerous, as we learned at the beginning, right? So hopefully there's no slipping involved and we don't need another crack in the logo. Two cracks is enough. Great. Now, thanks again for taking your time and bringing us some insights into the creation, the background of the distillery and the gins, and giving us some insights into how it's been made. I basically urge people to give it a try, because as I said, I really enjoyed the Navy Strength. Need to take a look into the other ones as well. If there's a distributor from Germany listening to this, I can only recommend at least the Navy Strength, but I'm pretty sure the rest is very close to it as well. And have people try it and probably stop by the distillery and take a look at how you're doing things there. Thanks again, and looking forward to seeing obviously your new slow gin popping up at some point, and new products emerging from the distillery, because as we probably all understood by now, there's probably a lot of ideas and things that you're going after, of which you even mentioned some. So perfect.
Yeah, well, thank you. It was my pleasure.
I'll link everything on the website. Sorry, we kind of talked over each other there. So people will find everything and have the option to actually read a little bit more on the website and find the way to buy the products as well. Thank you, Bojnjan, for taking the time in between the different steps of the current distillation to talk to us. I hope you enjoyed the interview and got a few insights and maybe got inspired to try that gin, because as you probably could tell from the interview and my mentioning of the Navy Strength version, it is a fabulous gin. It really is fun to drink and has lots of aroma. So if you have the chance, try and get your hand on a bottle and give it a zip and mix something nice with it. If you like the show, that's great. I'm always looking forward to hearing from you, getting any kind of feedback. Please excuse the minor technical difficulties we had. I had to do two little cuts here, but no content was left out, as a matter of fact. In case you have any questions, feel free to send them over, and do yourself a favor and visit the Broken Bones Distillery website, or maybe even their bar and distillery itself if you get the chance. In the next episode, we'll be talking to someone from Germany, and let me give you a little hint. It will be a very, very special edition in terms of talking about special editions. And maybe you can guess what it is at this time of the year. If not, just ask a little monkey around the corner. All right, that's it for episode 3. Hope you enjoyed it. As I said, find all the infos and details on the website, gin.show, and talk to you in the next episode. Cheers and gin zalabim. Bye.